Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, we're recording this on a weeknight, therefore I didn't provide any wine or beverages.
That's all right. We'll keep it moving.
We're going to talk about five films tonight. Three of them foreign. Yay, I know that. I know you're really happy about that. But we're going to start out with the biggest film of the week, which is actually not that big. I think the major studios must be taking this weekend off. But we're going to talk about The Disaster Artist, and I want to set you up for that, because you saw it, I didn't. But we had to go see a movie to prepare for The Disaster Artist, and it's called The Room. I've heard about The Room. I've always heard about The Room since it came out in 2003, but I never took the time to see it, because people say it really is one of the worst movies ever made. And it's become a cult classic. You can go to your local independent theater in Washington, D.C., that's E Street, once a month on a Saturday night at midnight, and you can watch The Room. And apparently there are rules. When we walked in, we got plastic spoons, we got a sheet of what to say, after that, of what to do, when to cheer, and I loved it. It was honestly one of the best screenings I've ever been to in my life. I had so much fun, and I would have hated it if I watched it alone.
Absolutely.
On my couch. Yes. On Netflix or on a DVD. This has, if you've never seen The Room, it has to be seen with people who've already seen it in a movie theater when you're throwing spoons. And it's been a while now. It's been three weeks to a month since we saw it, and it's just been stuck in my head. The one-liners, the accent. Oh, hi, doggy. It's
terrible,
it's all
acting.
So I love, and I was so when the website I go to rate movies, I rated it really high. Like, I really liked the movie. It's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
It's out of focus. It doesn't make any sense. But it was so much fun, Hannah. The audience we were with had a blast.
It was fun. I mean, I would have missed things if you didn't have. This is one time where you're like, shout away. You want people to actually talk and throw things through this film because they're pointing things out that you might have missed.
The neck.
It's like the girl has like some goiter-looking thing in the neck, and all of a sudden that's all you can see. And
oh, hi, Mark.
And the oh, hi. And now I want to say to everybody, oh, hi, Charlie.
Oh, hi, Hannah.
and let's see. There are a lot of
It was
really,
a phenomenal it was, experience.
It was an experience. I had said that it was the most fun I'd had at an interactive screening since a tipsy late night screening of Sound of Music that was also interactive where people had roles and props. And so I do think there is something to be said. It's kind of like a Rocky Horror experience, only the difference is Rocky Horror knew what it was and knew what it meant to be. Tommy Wiseau, who wrote, produced, directed, and starred in The Room and financed it himself.
$6 million.
He really thought he was making a good movie.
He did.
It's so bad, it's hysterical.
And one of the actors in it, actually his buddy in real life, Greg Sestero, wrote a book about the odd experience. James Franco picked it up, read it, was fascinated. He'd heard about the film, and he decided to adapt the book into a film. So The Disaster Artist is the making of The Room. So it's actually for a very select audience. A lot of people are going to be hesitant to see The Disaster Artist if they haven't seen The Room, and I'm on their side. I would say don't see The Disaster Artist if you haven't seen The Room, but I haven't seen The Disaster Artist, Hannah, so what did I miss?
You missed a rather brilliant movie about the making of a really, really terrible movie, and it's just amazing, and James Franco is kind of an odd duck in Hollywood anyway.
He is.
And Tommy Wiseau, who he's playing, is obviously a very odd duck in many ways. And so the casting is perfection here. I don't know if anyone else could have pulled it off quite the way that James Franco does. And so he's playing Tommy Wiseau in The Disaster Artist and they're remaking, they're making The Room. Seth Rogen is like a script supervisor, and his role is small but very funny because you've got these real Hollywood filmmaker types who are, who were involved with The Room and couldn't believe how bad it was even on set. This guy had no idea what he was doing. He was spending so much money. They were shocked that the checks all cleared. Nobody really knows who this guy is, where he came from. He's got some Eastern European type of accent, yet he says he's from New Orleans.
He might be a vampire.
And he might be a vampire. And he's got millions of dollars, and nobody knows where his money came from.
There's speculation that it's real estate, but no one knows.
But nobody really knows. And so this movie is just a lot of fun. I think it helps tremendously. I can't even imagine. I'm waiting to talk to somebody who maybe sees The Disaster Artist without having seen The Room first.
That'd be crazy.
To figure out if they get it at all, because I think you'd miss the fun of it. And you'd miss the point, and you'd think you were watching a really bad movie, even though you're watching this really good movie about a bad movie.
And I warn you, don't go out and get The Room and watch it by yourself. You'll hate it.
Yeah, because there's so many things that are wrong with this film. I mean, the continuity is bad. The green screen stuff is so obvious. The dialogue is atrocious. And yet...
But it's amazing.
It is. But the experience of watching these two films, The Disaster Artist and in 2003's Room, kind of in some sort of pairing, just makes the whole thing all the more fascinating, I would say, to watch. And James Franco's brother, Dave, is the one who actually plays the best friend and the guy who wrote the book, Greg Sestero. And so
Mark is my best friend.
But he cheated on him with his
You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
Yes. There are lines that are going to just stick with us, and I suspect we'll be repeating for many, many podcasts to come. But overall, I mean, it just one of the best parts too is when they get to the closing credits, they show you some of the recreated, like, side by side scenes. So you've got these actors from The Disaster Artist recreating the exact scenes from The Room. And so they show side by side the clips, and it is so spot on. And it is the best impersonation of bad acting that you could ever imagine.
I've been watching clips and interviews of James Franco impersonate Tommy Wiseau, and I never want to stop. He's really good, and it's fun. And I like doing the accent myself.
Yes,
it's really fun to play with. So I want to ask you, not only did he star in this, James Franco directed this movie, and talk about you said he's an odd duck in Hollywood. He's an odd duck as a director. He's directed dozens of films, dozens, and no one's ever seen them. They're so small and out of the way, like art, like student art house kind of pictures. And I remember I saw one in 2013. It was called Interior Leather Bar, and it was about the 40 minutes that got cut from that Al Pacino movie Cruising. Like, it took place in a gay bar and had some gay sex in it. And he made a movie about so he's done this before.
Yeah.
He made a movie about another movie, and that was about missing footage. Now he made another movie about a movie, about a bad movie. James Franco is an odd duck.
I mean, I loved him in, 27 Hours was, to me, like, his most mainstream.
That's just acting, though, not directing.
Right, but that was, to me, that was... the only time that and Pineapple Express, I guess.
He plays a really good stoner.
He plays a good stoner. So, you know, those are the kinds of movies where I've liked him in. I think I liked him in this movie because nobody else could have played Tommy Wiseau the way that he does. And to see, they've done a lot of interviews together now. And the most fascinating thing about Tommy Wiseau and about this movie is that Tommy's perfectly okay with the fact that his movie sucked, and he's achieved the dream, because this terrible movie went on to become a cult classic, and then a book was written about it, and now a movie based on the book is out there, and this guy gets this whole new exposure all over again that I think is really what he loves and what he's all about. And he's given his blessing to this film, even though it simultaneously mocks the movie and mocks Tommy and glorifies him and extols him at the same time. So it's so hard to explain, but it truly is the kind of thing that you're going to hear about how The Disaster Artist is potential awards fodder, and you're going to wonder if you should see it. And I just like you, I strongly recommend. I think there are other theaters. I think New York does it, the midnight showing once a week or once a month there as well. So if you can find it, or if you can just gather up a group of friends. So if you're going to rent it, make sure you don't watch it alone. You just have to embrace the fact that you are watching a horrible, horrible movie.
Embrace the suck.
Embrace the suck. And then embrace the brilliance of the disaster artist after that.
Tommy Wiseau, you're a brilliant enigma, sir.
Indeed.
All right, our next film is the first foreign film we're going to talk about, and it's from it's Norway's Oscar submission this year to the 90th Academy Awards. Every country gets to nominate one movie for the best foreign film Oscar, and this is Norway's submission.
They need a do-over.
We call it Thelma. They call it Thelma. And it's from Joachim Trier. This is his fourth film, and I had I didn't realize it until later. I've seen all four of his movies. Reprise, Oslo, August 31st, and Louder Than Bombs.
And guess how many of those I've seen?
I have no, I'm going to say zero.
Zero.
I really enjoyed Thelma. Thelma is played by a nice young actress called Eileen Harbo. She grows up secluded, religious, and conservative in the Norwegian countryside and moves to the big scary city, becoming a college freshman. Not the first girl to do that, and certainly not the first girl on film to do that. And she decides to major in biology. Well, that's kind of conflict with her religious upbringing, kind of expand her horizons. She kind of finds girls attractive. Uh-oh, that's going to also conflict with your upbringing. So therefore, inside, she has these internal struggles. She's afraid, she has fear, she's confused, she has lust, she has guilt. Put them all together, and these feelings actually start to manifest. They come outside of her and she can do things. So we're looking at this internal struggle of a girl through a supernatural lens. I'm not going to tell you what she does or what she can and cannot do, because a lot of times she doesn't even know. But she's doing things and she's affecting people around her. Hannah's giving me this look right now. And I didn't love it, but I really liked this film. It was contemplative. It was absorbing. Good job on you, Joachim Trier.
This is one of those ones where I can't imagine it's not going to win. There are so many better foreign language films out there. I couldn't even believe that it was their entry. It's just kind of sad if that's
the really. What are the other Norwegian films you saw this year?
I don't know, but it's just this movie is so creepy and bizarre, and it reminded me of, I told you, that movie A Cure for Wellness, yeah, that I think only you and John Armstrong liked.
I went very middle of the road on that. You know who John Armstrong liked it? And Christian Hammacher liked that a lot.
Liked it. Our two favorite listeners liked it. But I don't, I didn't particularly like that one, and I like this one less.
That one was way more out there, not sci-fi, but almost horror than Thelma is.
Yeah, Thelma is definitely more contemplative, as you say, but it's still not a mainstream, accessible foreign language film.
Here
unlike
it is.
Unlike the next one we're going to talk about, this one I don't think can cross that
bridge. So I made you watch this next one because you didn't think you had time, you didn't want to. And when I saw it and the subject matter and everything, I was like, it wouldn't be right for me to review this alone. It has to be, the woman has to see this to you know, either agree or disagree with me. And we're talking about The Divine Order, Die Göttliche Ordnung.
Yeah.
Just talked about Norway's Oscar submission. This is Switzerland's Oscar submission to the 90th Academy Awards, and it's from director Petra Volpa. It's this year's suffragette. If you remember suffragette from last year, Carey Mulligan, Meryl Streep, getting women's suffrage. This is Swiss women in 1971 saying, you know what, maybe it's time us women to get a say, because they couldn't vote. Women in Switzerland couldn't vote until, really, in local elections until 1991. But
right.
1971, they see across the pond what's going on. There's this montage, Gloria Steinem, all the women in the streets, equal rights, equal pay. And in Switzerland, they're in the kitchen. Be at home, otherwise you're a bad mother if you're not raising children. You don't love your children? Why are you out of your home?
Or your husband if you're not just home doing, cleaning socks and doing laundry.
I like the subject matter. I thought it was very well done. It was nice to see. I don't see a lot of Swiss films. I don't know if I can name two, four or five. I couldn't. So I enjoyed myself, but it didn't knock my socks off. It didn't blow my mind. There's nothing really too original here, but it's just capable.
This one is so much better than Thelma. Come on.
No, I think I like Thelma a little bit better.
No. The Divine Order is the opposite of Thelma in terms of being a very accessible foreign language film that everyone can understand and enjoy. It's a heartwarming, character-driven story. I remember when I first started watching it, I thought it was actually a documentary. I had to kind of double-check because it opened with the 60s music and the Gloria Steinem stuff and the marchers in the U.S. For Women's Lib. And then suddenly, it cuts to this small village in Switzerland and this referendum about giving women there the right to vote. And so it's really just about how this woman in this small village kind of comes to realize that, hey, wait a minute, I want to work. It's no disrespect to my family.
And she has to get her husband's written permission to go get a job.
Yeah, and so she ends up being sort of this unlikely heroine. She rallies. She becomes the sort of focal point for this community's efforts to get women to vote for women's rights and for them to have the ability to vote. And so I really do think that, especially for this time, it reminded me after the Women's March in Washington, it just has a very accessible, contemporary feel. And it's a great story. I mean, who knew? 1971.
I think I heard about that. It's like a trivia question you'll run into at trivia night at the bar.
I guess.
But, I really like it. It is empowering. I felt it. Technically, I'm the evil person.
Technically.
Watching this film because, I could vote. But I'm a landowning white male. But I liked, we're talking about Nora. She's the main character. I really liked her character arc. She's played by Marie Leuenberger. And I loved her character. She starts off as a normal, happy house. She's actually happy. She mm-hmm. likes raising her two boys and providing, or, taking care of her husband, Hans, maybe not so much her father-in-law. But she unexpectedly in today's words, gets woke.
Yeah.
She reads some pamphlets. Her niece runs into some trouble and she disagrees how the state is handling her niece. And she gets woke. And she, unlike other women in the village who might share her sympathies, they keep quiet. They're afraid. They'll be ostracized if they speak up. She's like, she takes that first step and sticks her head up above the crowd and says, you know what? This is wrong and I want to talk about it.
Yeah, and what I really liked about this, too, is that Hans, the husband, you don't really know how to feel about him through most of this film. And where it's like, is he supportive of her at all? Is he just quietly supportive? Is he going to come to the defense of the women? Is he angry? Is he going to, prevent her from working outside the home? And so his character takes a bit of an interesting arc.
When he started to make that apple pie, though, I didn't believe it for a second.
Yeah, the whole
I didn't
apron.
Believe it for one
yeah,
second.
Yeah, we were suddenly wearing an apron and he's baking in the kitchen. But because the women have gone on strike.
The women go on strike.
The men are having to fend for themselves for a few days. And it's like, oh my goodness, what do we do? Who's going to feed the children? It's that part. It's a little contrived there. But it's still, that's where the heart of the movie really comes in is the relationships between the women themselves and the relationship between the women and their husbands and just sort of trying to figure out how this little village's impact, can play in the big city.
Agree or disagree with me here, the best film in the scene is they go to this workshop. It's led by the Swedish feminist, and she
you would like that scene.
It's a memorable scene. They compare female anatomy to animals, and it sounds like I'm a fox, I'm a tiger, I'm a squirrel, and they show the pictures, and it's like, what a memorable, amazing scene.
They
pass out
memorable.
The mirrors.
Women are holding up a mirror to a certain private part and kind of giving them an animal name.
It's such a good scene.
It's a very memorable scene, and it has a payoff in the end. This definitely is on my... I would say The Divine Order is just a really good
girl. You didn't even want to watch it.
I did. I know. What happened was, we had the opportunity. This one had screened at Middleburg.
It was at Middleburg, yeah.
And I just couldn't fit it into my Middleburg, slate. And Artie Chick had already seen it. So she was reviewing it for Chick Flicks. And so there were so many things to watch that it was kind of difficult to figure out where it would fall on the priority list.
But and this won a big award at the Tribeca Film Festival, which is a major film festival in New York every year. It won the audience award.
Yeah. And this one, I believe right now, probably goes on my short list for best foreign language films.
I like Thelma better.
The Divine Order, skip Thelma. No one other than Charlie will ever see Thelma.
You're so wrong about that.
We'll see.
All right, our final two films, we split because we couldn't do it to ourselves. Hannah did not want to watch the Korean film, and I didn't want to watch the Hallmark film. So I watched The Swindlers. It's not good. We watched we're talking about three foreign films this week, and two of them are good. The Swindlers is, the most recent version was Focus, starring Will Smith and Margot Robbie. Think of The Con Men. The one from 2000 starring Nick Cage, which is one of the best ones, Matchstick Men. And the most famous one is probably The Sting, Robert Redford. So that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about Con Men, and and you don't really know until, because you know there's going to be a big twist. Is someone, you know, you can guess the twist right away. It's not hard. You know what's going on. I love Korean films, and you even loved a Korean film this year, which is also, you said, was going to go on your top five, yes. A Taxi Driver.
It is still on there.
So you're not against Korean films just because they're Korean. But, I'm not feeling it. I couldn't fall asleep last night because I was tearing the plot apart. That doesn't work. That doesn't work. How would they have done that? Why would they have done that? It's destroying the box office in South Korea right now.
Really?
It's doing very well. The better actors in it plays the prosecutor. His Ji Tae-yu. He was in 2003's Old Boy, the Korean version, not Spike Lee's version that Josh Brolin was in. You sad you missed The Swindlers?
No, because I did watch the first half hour.
Did you really?
I did. I watched the first half hour and I went, oh, it's another one of Charlie's Korean revenge movies.
Yeah, there's revenge.
And then I thought, I can see how I would get into this movie maybe if I didn't have to read subtitles. So I can kind of understand how it can be
a movie critic and not like to read subtitles.
How it can be a much, it was like slow.
You had to read subtitles in The Divine Order.
But that's the difference. I was able to stay with it. This one I just checked out because every character looked exactly the same to me. That first half hour, come on, I couldn't tell.
No, it's very melodramatic Con Man movie.
I'm sure that was part of the whole point, is that some people you couldn't really tell what they looked like, and it's con artists, who's conning the cons. And so I did get into it. I watched enough of it to know that that I really didn't need to spend another hour and a half watching the rest of it, because it was not going to float up into my top foreign language film.
No, you honestly, I hate when you quit movies, but
I know.
Miss anything.
And
don't go see The Swindlers. It's a ridiculous film.
No one else will see it. And the difference is that I wasn't quitting this one because I wasn't supposed to watch it to begin
with. No, you weren't, because you took one for the team, because I said, I'm not, Hannah, watching Kepler's Dream. I'm not doing it.
And you should have. I can't believe it. See, why can't you give Kepler's Dream a half hour? Because
you weren't even supposed to give The Swindlers a half hour. You said you weren't going to do it.
No, but you could. I still think you should take a look at Kepler's Dream, because it is
very much.
Look
at that stack of movies on my table. You think I'm ever going to watch Kepler's Dream?
Well, Kepler's Dream definitely is. It could be a Hallmark, Lifetime, Family Channel. It is a made-for-TV type of movie. Very formulaic, emotionally manipulative. It's got, you know, sort of like your character actor level people. The only really known players in it, the Holland Taylor, who was like the spunky grandmother in Two and a Half Men.
Oh, yeah.
She's the grandmother in this film. And it's about this 11-year-old girl named Ella, played by Isabella Blake Thomas. And she's this city girl whose mother is sick. So, you know, it opens up, you know the mom is sick. And she's got to undergo some kind of stem cell transplant therapy for leukemia. So she sends her daughter off to the grandmother who's never met before, who lives in New Mexico on a ranch and is the father's mother. And the father is, of course, this absentee dad who never comes through for her and for the mom. And, you know, it plays out just like any Hallmark movie. You know, what do you think is going to happen with the dad and his grandmother, you know, the grandmother and the relationship? It is it's just lame, but it's one of those ones that if you get sucked into those Lifetime marathons, this would fit right in
Who
there.
Who gets sucked into Lifetime marathons?
Oh, tons of people do. Oh, man, it's a chick flick heaven.
What's worse, Kepler's Dream or Year by the Sea, which are both Hallmark crap?
It's a different. This is more, because this one's based on a young adult novel.
Oh, dear.
So that's the difference. It's an adaptation of this novel by Juliet Bell. So if anyone's read the novel, the book, then maybe they would have some reason to seek this movie out. I think it's premiering, it's in theaters and in demand at the same time.
It's in theaters?
Yeah, some theaters.
It's in the theaters the way The Swindlers is in the theaters.
It's in select theaters and in demand starting December 1st, starting Friday. I can't imagine that anyone would go out to the theater to see it, but if you are a
glutton for punishment,
a 12-year-old, or the tween set, and you've read the book, and you and your mom like sitting around watching the Hallmark and Lifetime movies, then this is absolutely this is the film for you.
Now, why would mom and daughter go see Kepler's Dream when they could go see The Room at a midnight screening?
Nobody should go see Kepler's Dream. They shouldn't go to a theater.
They're going to make a movie 10 years from now about the making of Kepler's Dream.
No, because it's not. No. If you see The Room and then you see Kepler's Dream, you're going to think Kepler's Dream is like the finest piece of art
probably, yes,
ever made. And so it's not. It's just one of those ones where it's not bad. It's just total formula. Seen it before. Very predictable. Kind of, just sort of middle of the road TV movie kind of material. And that's the only that's the audience. And I would not send anyone to the theater for this. But absolutely, if I had to decide whether I like Kepler's Dream better than The Swindlers and Thelma combined, yes.
Oh, how dare you?
Yes,
Thelma. If Thelma gets an Oscar nomination, I'm gonna laugh at you.
If Thelma gets an Oscar nomination,
it's really good. Yeah. It's so well made.
It's so weird. Oh. It's just it's creepy. And so yeah, sure. I guess if you want that.
You know what's creepy? Get Out, and that made $1 billion.
I love Get Out,
and it was creepy.
Get Out was good creepy. Thelma is creepy creepy.
All right.
Difference.
To recap. Well, you have to go see The Room. It's mandatory should you want to see the Disaster Artist. And Hannah says The Disaster Artist
is great if you've seen The Room.
Very good. I really liked Thelma.
I really did not.
I liked The Divine Order. It's a good story, but I'm pretty sure I've seen it before.
I like The Divine Order a lot more than you did. And I think it's just a great little story, and it is a girl power film.
I did not like The Swindlers. In fact, I've seen a couple, at least three, better Korean films this year, including A Taxi Driver and The Villainess.
I agree. Even I made it through The Villainess.
And you didn't like The Villainess.
I didn't like it, but I made it through.
Yeah, you did.
So there you go.
One of the bloodiest movies of the year.
Yes.
Kepler's Dream,
Kepler's
come on.
Kepler's Dream,
You said Kepler's Dream's better than Thelma. Your
it
credibility
is, better
is
than
hurting
Thelma.
So bad right
let's
now.
Just say for the average... for the tween set, it's the better choice.
Well, all right, pay attention this week to Facebook and the tweets. The Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association is nominating and voting on their year-end best of. We're talking best picture, actor, actress, all the way down.
Yeah, I'm starting to make my list.
I got my list ready. Pretty sure it's not going to match anyone else's.
It's probably not going to match mine. And like you, I have my stack of films that I still need to get through this weekend before we vote.
All right. Well, on behalf of the Cinema Clash, I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlicks.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.